Come in, Coley!
Well, hello, George. I'm Colin Campbell. I'm here to help you review some tapes.
That's awesome. As Director of Player Safety in the NHL, I'm entrusted to make only the best and wisest decisions.
That's perfectly right. That's what I did in all my years in the as the Director of Player Safety and Suspensions and stuff.
God, you're inspirational.
Let's review the first tape. This one is of Brad Marchand.
He goes up ice with Nash. Marchand's shot saved by Appleby. He covers up and Johansson reaches to his face as Marchand went tumbling through.
Jeez, that looked absolutely vicious. Why does he keep doing that?
Well, I don't know about that, George. It looked like it was pretty incidental and he really didn't mean what he was doing. I mean, he's only been suspended and fined up to 8-9 times in the past, but you know how it is. He is a Bruin.
Yeah, you know what, you're right. I'm going to give him 5 games. Who's up next?
Next we got Dustin Brown.
Now it's held in by Schultz. Hit by Dustin Brown, he'll take a penalty. Schultz is down. He was in a tough spot, and he was hit from behind by Dustin Brown.
Holy cow, that was unbelievable. I couldn't do cross-checks like that in my prime. He ugly.
Well, I don't know about that. Justin Schultz made himself vulnerable, so we really should put some of the blame on Justin because, you know...
Yeah, you know, you're right, and he's won the cup a lot of times. I'm just gonna fine him.
Okay, next we've got that dirty, dirty Andrew Cogliano.
Kempe starting the motor through center. Adrian Kempe to Pearson out wide. Ooh, and Kempe got hit up high.
Wait a minute. Hang on a second. What are you showing me just now? He's got the modern-day streak for never missing a game. He's known as a class act in all corners of hockey.
I don't know about that. He seems pretty dirty to me, and he's not wearing a Bruins uniform either.
You know what, Coley? I'm going to ask you what you would do. What do you think we should give Andrew Cogliano, first-time offender with a perfectly sparkling record and no reason to suspend him whatsoever?
I say throw the book at him. Where's your messiah now?
You'd better hope to high hell that Colin Campbell doesn't hear this sketch that we just played.
Yeah, or his Boston Bruin playing son, well, former Bruin, but...
Favoritism, look at me, my daddy, director of player safety, and I'm protected.
You know what I didn't get ever with Colin Campbell being in the NHL offices of discipline? Was that they said it was never a conflict of interest until the Bruins... made the 2011 Stanley Cup final, and then Campbell stepped aside and became a fan and watched his son in the stands. So
terrible.
How was it that
so
it
ridiculous.
Wasn't a conflict of interest before, even if he wasn't dealing with a Bruins scenario? So let's say a Toronto Maple Leafs player or a Montreal Canadiens player had to face some sort of discipline. How does that still not affect the Boston Bruins? It was a joke. The NHL is sometimes they just shoot themselves in the foot over and over again, and the Colin Campbell situation was definitely one of them.
Sometimes shoot themselves in the foot. This sketch, for all of its satirical and lampooning content, which you and I love and our audience enjoys, is also a revealer of the truth of the inconsistency of the NHL. I mean, I'm sorry, Dustin Brown and Brad Marchand are two weasels. If you were caught in a dark alley with those two guys, they would weasel you to infamy. They would take you down. I don't know what that means, by the way. I know I'm making it sound sordid. But those are two of the worst offenders for player disrespect in the league. And the third guy is literally the polar opposite. And yet one of them walked out with a fine, and it wasn't Cogliano. You dig?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And as Elliot Friedman said in his most recent 31 Thoughts... privately and publicly, current and former players were not happy with what happened to Cogliano in terms of the getting a 2-game suspension, thus halting his 830-plus game Ironman streak, which is incredible. And some of the reasons they're saying is that as a former Mighty Duck, George Parros wanted to show that he wasn't favoring his former club by giving an extra harsh suspension to current Duck Cogliano. So it was ridiculous. There were other variables that took place, and the unfortunate thing was that a great streak, not just in hockey, but in sports, was ended because of some stupid decision-making by George Parros, and maybe even behind the scenes, as we got footage of that, Mr. Colin Campbell.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Colin Campbell.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was crazy. I mean, and talk about...
You know, you know what he should probably do is he should suspend himself for Goon 2, Last of the Enforcers. I don't even know what it's called. The fact that George Parros came back for Goon 2 and was more consistent in portraying himself than as a lawmaker, I mean, it's been a joke. It's been a real joke for the NHL, the inconsistency, not just with the player safety department, but also with these recent string of goalie interference calls that have affected both of our teams. It's a joke. If I were to tell you right now, Habs fan, explain to me how it works, I think you'd have a hard time doing it. Do you even know how it works? Is it all about being in the blue paint? Is it how much you touch the goalie? Because it seems like there's no clue, and it's being done at ice level. Explain to me why it's being done at ice level and not in some office where somebody can say definitively, you know what, yep, you interfered with him. I'm waving that off.
Well, that's the crazy thing. You're asking me, a fan, you know, who's detached from the game, not exactly involved or employed with the NHL or any NHL teams, and you're asking me, and I don't know, and we watch a lot of hockey, but you also ask, not you, but he was asked the question, Mike Babcock, a coach in the NHL, not just a coach in the NHL, one of the best coaches in the game, was asked, do you know what goaltender interference is nowadays? And he said no. So that's a joke. That is an absolute joke that a coach in the NHL doesn't know. And I'm not blaming Mike Babcock here at all. I'm blaming the league yet again for just shooting themselves in the foot for not knowing what constitutes goalie interference. And let's not get started on the offside calls here, where a toe in the air beyond the blue line is called an offside. And sometimes offsides happen 45 seconds before the goal actually happens. And that goal is called back because a play that didn't even involve anything to do with the goal, it affects the game. It's just ridiculous.
We watch a lot of games with people who played the game. We know a lot of people who played the game. We've interviewed a lot of people who play the game. And it seems like if you were actually a hockey player, for you to witness this travesty of the inconsistency with these offside calls, it just seems like they really understand that it's not being applied properly. And then, like, this is like the fourth thing that we mentioned. Then you throw in concussion protocol. And then you start realizing that the NHL really is using this as like a guinea pig year. There's a lot of experimentation going on, and they just better hope it doesn't affect the game when it matters most during the playoffs and there's a controversial call and everybody's left, you know, scratching their heads and holding their hats and saying, we never knew what the actual rule was. That's Bush League. NHL should be better for that, I think you'll agree. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, they better hope that something doesn't happen in a big playoff game where they have to make a call like that. I mean, they're still embarrassed by the 1999 no-goal call, or
Dallas,
or what should have been a no-goal call by Brett Hall in the 1999 final. Cup-winning goal in overtime. Like, are you kidding me? And that was done wrong. So if something again happens, it will just be terrible, terrible press and terrible publicity for the NHL if they're again embarrassed by their own dumb decisions.
Well, speaking of embarrassment and the Dallas Stars, and I did this little kind of cool segue where I realized that I still can't get over the fact that my team beat the Dallas Stars as hot as they are. And I can't get over the fact that your team lost to a team that doesn't normally score that many goals and it turned into the OK Corral. What's going on? Like, we can't even guess anymore how our teams are going to do. It just seems like on any given night they could surprise us or really disappoint us.
I think the Leafs are starting to come back into their own and are... Lately they've been beating the really good teams. With the Montreal Canadiens, it doesn't... You don't know what team is going to show up. And generally I'm fine with that because I don't mind not knowing which team shows up because, as you know, I really don't want them to collect as many points as possible. But it seems that they play well against the good teams, unless they're the Boston Bruins, where they lose all three, but not show up against kind of the marginal teams like last night with the Carolina Hurricanes. So it's... And what was interesting was they're getting off to poor starts, as they usually do. And I think last night Claude Julien kind of called them out, saying that pros have to be pros, and we're not here to babysit, we're here to prepare. And I think that was a direct shot at some of the Stars that are not showing up on time, so to speak. So it's interesting to see what's happening there, because Claude Julien is kind of, he's kind of getting a little bit more short with his star players and essentially not going to take anything more. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens over the next few weeks.
Well, and the pressure in both markets, you know, there have been a lot of that in the media the last few weeks, the whole calling out, a player calls out. Frederik Andersen had a problem. Patrick Marleau had to get up between periods during a frustrating stretch. It shows you just how powerful the magnifying glass is. You know, the microscope is so searing hot in the way that these players are being looked at that they can really do no right. Because no matter what they do, someone's going to complain about some facet of the team. What do you think about the fact that here you and I are at the All-Star break and my team is kind of comfortably entrenched in a playoff spot? Meanwhile, yours still doesn't have any semblance of direction on whether or not they're going to rebuild or make any trades or try to make some kind of heroic run. Maybe they'll be like the Senators. What if they do something crazy in the last 2 months of the season and make the playoffs? Would that be the worst thing ever?
That's funny that you say that, because a few weeks ago, Claude Julien said, well, you never know what's going to happen. You could be like the Senators of a couple of years ago where they went on a run with the Hamburglar. And I was thinking to myself, is a coach really saying that? Like an NHL coach, usually, you know, the standard answer is, you know, take it a game at a time and then we'll go from there. But he was like hoping for like an incredible 20-game run based on some minor league goalie, some historic run, and he was referencing that. And that wasn't good news to me. Now, where Montreal is going to go, I think it's pretty clear, especially with, again, the loss to the Hurricanes and it being the All-Star break and where they are. I think the direction will become clear next week as to where they're going to go with this club. And the funny thing is with the Leafs, with them comfortably in third, everyone seems to be thinking, well, looks like it's going to be a first-round matchup with the Boston Bruins. Oh, we got to hold on a second there, because if you take a look at the standings, the Bruins are pretty darn close to the Tampa Bay Lightning. It might be a Leafs-Tampa first-round series, which no one thought was going to happen. What do you think there?
Well, I certainly don't want that to happen. I mean, just watching the Lightning is like watching a different brand of hockey. Everything about them is high octane. Everything about them is heavy forecheck. In some ways, they're very similar to the Maple Leafs, but what they have that the Leafs don't have is a stud defenseman and a defensive core that can really shut down the opposition. I don't think enough gets talked about. You know, everybody's too busy talking about Stamkos' renaissance and Kucherov's dominance and the great goaltending of Vasilevsky, but they don't talk about the fact that this is a very well-coached, solid hockey team. And this is exactly the kind of team that can negate a lot of the Mike Babcock magic, especially if they go into the playoffs without their defensemen all healthy. So I'm kind of glad the All-Star game is here now, because now the Maple Leafs can take a break, because that Dallas win and that Chicago overtime win in Chicago showed me that I think the best is yet to come for the Leafs.
So you were mentioning about your depleted defense, especially with Morgan Rielly out, and the big rumors now are that the New York Rangers are looking to sell. And the big names coming out of New York as being available are, one, Rick Nash, local boy, Matt Zuccarello, the Italian-Norwegian stallion, and of course Ryan McDonagh, a defenseman, a very heralded defenseman who would probably look good in the blue and white. What do you think could happen there?
Well, I think I'm going to first of all project those first names out of my head, because I want nothing to do with them. Not because I've got a problem with Zuccarello, but the idea of Rick Nash being on a hockey team, even with his interesting revival a couple of years back, don't need him. Too slow, too plodding. McDonagh is fascinating, except for the fact that you're a weasel, because, you know, a few days ago I was all high and mighty and excited on Ryan McDonagh until Willie Nylander, once again, Willie Nylander demonstrates to the fans what kind of a mercurial talent he is. And I can't imagine them trying to trade Marner or Nylander. It just seems like it's one of those things that will come back to haunt them. But McDonagh, man, oh man, he is, you know, he's the classic shepherd's pie of defensemen. He's that reliable meal. You sit down at the table, you know what you're going to get, and he doesn't go beyond it. He just stays within his zone. Exactly the kind of defenseman that I think Babcock would hang his hat on, don't you think? Like, he would look at McDonagh and say, man, when you're out there, I don't have to give Polak minutes. I don't have to give Carrick minutes. And I've got to teach Borgman to be a little bit more disciplined, because I think Andreas Borgman's going to kill someone before the end of this month.
I think there could be a potential fit there with McDonagh, because the Leafs have a lot of youngsters in their system, and of course on the current big club, while the Rangers don't. Did you know that the Rangers have not had a pick, I think, in the top 40 for like since 2012? Something crazy like that. So they've been trading away a lot of picks and getting older, and their playoff runs are probably going to stop. So, yeah, there could be a potential fit there for McDonough.
It's been a competitive team for many years, and I just feel bad because, you know, King Henrik is getting long in the tooth, and you only have so many windows on an elite goaltender before you realize that you're carrying a toxic asset. And I only brought that up because you know exactly why I brought that up. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge, say no more, wink, wink. Maybe in that reverse order. Active to get out of it.
Yes, well, with Carey Price, it's just mind-boggling. Again, all logic points to not giving him a huge contract. But what were they supposed to do? His best years, I mean, who's going to have a Hasek-like season again? His best years are obviously behind him. He's injury-prone. He's had some major injuries this year. And now it comes out that he actually was suffering from chronic fatigue syndrome. So you got a 30-year-old goalie who's supposed to be logging the bulk of your games, and he's saying that he's tired. Apparently it's been fixed, though, diet and supplements and stuff like that. But, I mean, it's all concerning. It's just from the moment Bergevin signed him to that deal, the whole hockey world, and especially in Montreal, were wondering like whether that's the right thing to do, especially in today's NHL, where you don't really need the best goalie to win the Stanley Cup. It's mind-boggling.
So here we sit at the halfway mark of this year's NHL season, and the general consensus seems to be that these Toronto Maple Leafs are underachieving. That's right, a significant contingent of people in Toronto and across this fair country seem to believe that the Maple Leafs are kind of behind the pace of all the hype that was anticipated for this year. And they're not wrong. The truth is that the Maple Leafs have underachieved in a lot of areas that have kind of gone unnoticed because we've been preoccupied with, you know, the daily Maple Leafs concerns of who's playing D and what Mike Babcock is rolling out in terms of lines and are we happy with the lines and it's this, that, and the other thing. What tends to get lost in the shuffle is the fact that Mitch Marner and William Nylander are really having disappointing seasons. And by their standards, this isn't an interpretation. The fact is that both of these players were projected to be 25 to 30 goal scorers, taking a great leap forward from really fantastic rookie campaigns in a sophomore season. But the reality now is that they are way behind schedule. And when you factor in all the other kind of middling seasons from players like Nazem Kadri and Tyler Bozak and Jake Gardner, suddenly you realize that for a team that seems to be 10 games over 500 and entrenched into a very safe playoff spot with not realistic hopes at either beating Boston or Tampa, you kind of ask yourself, where would this team be if they were trending in the direction people thought they should be at? It's actually kind of a scary thought and makes me realize that these are good problems to have. These are first world problems to have. These are the kind of problems you really shouldn't be worrying about, because in the grand scheme of things, this Maple Leafs team is only going to do better throughout time. And when they've got players like Travis Dermott coming in and picking up the reins, suddenly anything seems possible.
Can we stop saying that tanking is for losers? I'm tired of people saying that we shouldn't lose because that's not honorable or that's not the thing that our team should do. You know what being honorable is going to get you, Montreal Canadiens? It's going to get you the 12th overall pick in the draft. It's going to get you the 10th overall pick in the draft. Now, I'm not saying that those aren't shoo-ins to make the NHL, but statistically, historically, it has been proven that picking higher in the draft will not yield you a better player. It's been proven. Brian Wilde tweeted about it the other day. So, what has to happen for the Montreal Canadiens? I'm not saying players are going to go out there to lose on purpose. What has to happen is that the Montreal Canadiens need to trade away their better veteran players for assets, draft picks, and prospects. That's what has to happen. Then you can dress your younger players so that they can get experience in the NHL, and let's face it, they're probably not going to be as good, and the Montreal Canadiens will lose more games than they win, and that's the goal, to finish as low in the standings as possible, increase the possibilities of you getting a higher pick. Now again, it is not guaranteed, but isn't sports about putting your team in the best possible chance to win? And in this aspect, it's about putting your team in the best possible position to draft high. That's what has to happen. Now you're going to say, well, come on, Carey Price is in net. how are the Montreals going to be able to lose more than they win? Just take a look at the standings. The team in front of Carey Price is not that good, and they've lost more than they've won. If you're going to put an even weaker team in front of Carey Price, that's going to be even more of a guarantee that they're going to lose more than they win. So you've got to trade away the better players for picks, prospects, and assets. It has to happen. Montreal needs to get a direction for next season. Who cares if you're going to finish with 83 points versus 67 points? No one's going to remember that in 10 years. What they're going to remember is that you did finish with 67 points and you were able to get a great young player in the 2018 draft. Has to happen. Come on, Mark. Let's do it.
So, Kamal, how excited would you be if I were to tell you that live on this show, we're getting back a guest that goes all the way back to episode 3 of the season? How would you feel about that?
I feel great. It's really exciting to have Mikey Stevens back.
Mikey Stevens, whom I have now found out is not just the site expert at one of our great affiliates, Editor and Leaf, but he's also a contributor with Leaf Nation. He does the Toronto Marlies beat report on the fan-sided end of things, and he also has a fantastic podcast called the Kraken Wise Pod. Mike Stevens, welcome back to the show, good sir.
Thanks so much for having me back, guys. You know, it's been a while, and this is a day that I've been waiting for a while, so this is fantastic.
Holy moly. Well, that's why we gave you that extra long intro, right? Because I think the interview spot's pretty much over now. We don't really have anything else to add after that.
Yeah, we're good, right? We can pack it up, head home, everything's good?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, I think Kamal wants to catch up on the latest CFL news. So, you know, we gotta do what we gotta do here. Mike, we're really thrilled to have you back here on HVL because, you know, it's been a tough stretch for the Maple Leafs recently. And this Battle of Ontario victory is being heralded as one where voices in the locker room are starting to stand up and be heard, in particular Patrick Marleau and Freddie Anderson. But in the process, we're also seeing that Mike Babcock is basically being undermined in the eyes of the fans and being called the bumpkin who doesn't know what he's doing. What's your take on the success or lack thereof of the Maple Leafs this year?
Well, I've never been, you know, whenever you go on Twitter, you see the fire Babcock stuff, which is patently ridiculous. I mean, he's smarter than, you know, all three of us combined, you know, times infinity. He's a fantastic hockey coach. What I do know just from talking to people around the organization now that I'm doing the Marley stuff, my perception of Babcock and their perception of Babcock, they've kind of laid out to me, is that he's a fantastic systems coach. He really is, but his one, I guess if you were to call it a flaw, his one flaw is that when he has an idea of a player in his mind, it's nearly impossible to change it, which is what we've seen with Roman Polak, which is what we've seen with Leo Komarov, which is what we've seen with Matt Martin. We've seen with his toys, where all the numbers dictate, no, this guy's not performing in the spot that he's supposed to be performing. And like Roman Polak has been objectively terrible. He is far and away the worst player on the ice. Anytime he steps on it, he takes half as many penalties as he kills. It's been insane. Leo Komarov playing 24 minutes a night while Matthews plays 17 is also ridiculous. But it really comes down to the fact that Babcock loves his toys, and at this end, he's going to ice the team that he thinks is the best. And management, the only way they can really stem that is to take away his toys or to stop enabling him. But in terms of the recent success, or I guess lack of, it really is a deployment thing. Like the talent is there; they have all these guys. They're just not using them. They've barely scored any goals. They've, other than on Saturday in all of 2018. They were left with they'd scored less than 3 regulation goals throughout those entire games, and they have a guy who could put up 20 goals easily if you give him a full season. And Josh Levo, and he's shackled to the press box. You have two incredible offensive weapons who could step in, and I would say get maybe 15, 20 goals and add an extra level of speed in the Marlies and Kasperi Kapanen and Andreas Johnsson. And then you have a fantastic defenseman like Travis Dermott, who will sometimes get scratched for Roman Polak. So they have the pieces, how they use them, and I'm quite frankly, I'm not 100% sure what message they're trying to send right now, but this can't keep going on. This can't sustain. So at least I think that there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Mike, just picking up on some of the decisions that Mike Babcock has been making and seeing that a lot of people within Toronto and the Toronto media are questioning Babcock's decisions, and he's kind of been a little bit, you know, kind of short with the media and smart with his answers. Is that perception accurate in terms of maybe he's kind of feeling a little bit more pressure being in a very heavy Toronto hockey media market instead of, say, where in Detroit he won a lot, he wasn't questioned a lot, or even in Anaheim where there were probably two or three writers covering the team on a daily basis? Do you find Mike maybe acting differently or being surprised about how he's being questioned because of the amount of scrutinization that's applied to the Toronto Maple Leafs?
I would honestly say the B reporters, they have a really difficult job because Babcock is incredibly intimidating. But I honestly don't think that they've, and the perception of the fan base as well, is I don't think they've been hard enough because, you know, they're, how many other ways are you supposed to ask him why he was so active, why is he calmer of getting the minutes he is, you know, without going right at him? So I think that Babcock is a master of playing the media. He always knows how to drive the conversation. He knows how to drive it in the way that he wants it to. And if you're a reporter and he can smell, you know, if you're a reporter and you have a story you want to write and you're asking the questions for the story that you want to write, he can smell that from a mile away and shut that down pretty quickly. So I think that this is probably the first time, this is probably the most scrutiny he's faced as the coach of the Leafs. But I also think that you know, it's really just, it's nothing compared to what a guy like Randy Carlyle or Ron Wilson or the coach of the past, and they deserved it, but what they got. I think Babcock's had a very nice tenure in Toronto. You know, he was a deity after the Leafs made the playoffs last year. Like, you know, he could walk down the street and punch me in the face and I would have told him thank you. Like, it, you know, he's a fantastic coach. He's a great guy. But at this point, I think the media and I think the fans as well are starting to get tired of the obvious choices in his player deployment that just don't line up with what the stats and what reality says. So, yeah, he's very good at driving conversation. I don't really think that he's you know, wilting under the pressure of the media market, but I also think that, you know, this isn't as bad as it could be.
You know, Mike, if you keep using imagery involving being shackled to the press box and punching people in the face, we're going to come up with a sketch soon just based on your inspiration alone. Let's now look at what we have then. Let's concede that everything you've just said, which I'm sure that both myself and the Habs fan are in agreement with on Mike Babcock. What is this team today? If the playoffs were to start tomorrow, what are the chances, in your opinion, for the Toronto Maple Leafs against teams like the Tampa Bay Lightning or the Boston Bruins?
Well, I think they can go toe-to-toe with Boston. Like, I am, even in the midst of, you know, this depressing stretch of hockey, they're not the team that we've seen. Like, this is a good team. They have the pieces there. You know, any team with Austin Matthews, William Nylander, Mitch Marner, these weapons, they can do it. Boston, they have that fantastic line of, you know, of Pasternak, Bergeron, and Marchand, and that's incredible.
Yeah.
But McAvoy just went down with, you know, with an injury today. So the playoffs started today. They wouldn't have McAvoy. You know, Krejci's older. Their fourth line, I've never heard of anyone on their fourth line. You know, they look like the system generated creative player in NHL 18. Like, you know, when they just need to fill the minor leagues when you do be a GM. It's really like that. And so I think they have a great chance of beating Boston. I think it might be, you know, a 6 or 7 game series. It'll be incredibly entertaining. And it will probably not end the same way that it did in 2013, which is one of the last sports moments that made me cry. But I do think that they can take out Boston. It's very easy that they can, especially with the way – not easy, but it's very feasible that they can, especially with the way Anderson's playing. In terms of Tampa, I think it'll be an entertaining series. I think if they play their parts right, they could probably match up. Level ahead of the Leafs. They have this balanced attack. They have the goaltending. They have the defense, which is the element that's holding the Leafs back. So I think I think if they end up playing Tampa in the second round, 6-game series, they're done if the playoffs start today. And that's not including, you know, and that's them icing their roster the way that they're currently icing it, which is mind-numbingly bad. So if they start using the weapons that they have, they put, you know, they have, you have a fourth line of, they put Komarov down on the fourth line at center. You have Komarov, Janssen, Kapanen. Immediately that adds an element to your lineup that's incredible. You take Polak out, and then you have a bottom pair of Dermott and Borgman, and then Gardner and Carrick up top with Riley and Hainsey. That's not a fantastic defense, but you could do a lot worse. Like, there are these little tweaks that I think could make them actually go toe-to-toe with a team like Tampa. It just really depends on whether they want to use them.
Mike, you mentioned talking about the playoffs, and you mentioned Freddie Anderson. And we all know he's very capable of taking the Leafs far in the playoffs and how important goaltenders are in the playoffs. But did we see another side to Freddie Anderson when he called out his teammates about their lackluster performance and them coming back in Ottawa and putting up a much better performance than previous? Has Freddie Anderson kind of somewhat silently become a new leader of the Toronto Maple Leafs?
I think absolutely. I mean, it's very well documented that him and Matthews are best friends, and they hang out, and you can see them in warm-up all the time, you know, chatting, and it's kind of like a ritual for them. If anyone on the entire Toronto Maple Leafs team has earned the right to call his teammates out, it's Freddie Anderson. He has played the best hockey of his entire career, and that includes Anaheim, ever since October, really, when he had another dreadful October, which I think is just par for the course at this point, and then, you know, ended up being an elite player. Like, the fact that he's not in the All-Star game and Carey Price and his 9/11 save percentage is right now, it's a travesty. But I think that he is a silent leader because he's just this stoic, silent guy who's always there, always dependable, he's steady Freddy. And he's put this team on his back, and it's really disheartening when you stop, you know, 42 of 44 shots and you lose 2-1 in overtime on a third period blown lead. So I think this team really respects Freddie. I think they really rally around him, especially his buddy Matthews, and he's friends with all the younger guys. And I think that combined with the Patrick Marleau, you know, locker room speech, those are two players who are silent leaders who, when they open their mouth and when they talk, you listen.
Mike, why don't you tell our listening audience, which probably finds everything that you said on the spot to be really, really intriguing, how they can find you on social media, because I know you do about a million different cool things related to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Tell us what you're working on and how we can find you.
Well, I'm the Toronto Marlies beat reporter for FanSided, so I, you know, cover all their home games. And, you know, if I'm ever able to get a time in my school schedule and I can follow them on the road, that's when I do it. But, yeah, so I'm at Twitter, at MikeyStevens81. You know, I'm doing daily content for Editor in Leaf. I'm the new, you know, site expert there. And so definitely go to editorinleaf.com and check out, you know, articles by Mike Stevens. And then as well, I'm at theleafsnation.com, which is, you know, obviously it's a dream come true. I mean, I read those guys instead of doing homework when I was in high school, and now I'm writing for them, which is cool. and, yeah, so go to theleafsnation.com. I think it's actually mapleleafsnation.com. We had an SEO expert come in. But anyway. That's changed. And then I have a podcast, a Kraken Wise podcast, where me and my buddy, very similar to the one that you have, me and my buddy, his name's Patrick Gallagher. We've been friends ever since we were kids, and we just thought, you know, we might as well have someone listen to us ramble about sports. So we talk, you know, NFL, NHL, anything that comes into our mind, and it's a great time. So it's the Kraken Wise podcast on iTunes and SoundCloud and Google Play.
All things Toronto Maple Leafs, and if you're one of our proud listening audience members who happens to be a Habs fan, be sure to check him out, especially Mike Stevens. Thanks for joining us here on HVL.
Thanks so much. I can't wait to be back on, and I, you know, hope you guys have a great night.
So, Kamal, this show clearly hasn't been heavy enough on Maple Leafs content. I'm going to double down right now, and we're going to bring on a writer and contributor with Editor in Leaf right after speaking with Mike Stevens. I think this guest knows one or two things about him. And, of course, he is also a contributor to FanSided and SB Nation, and he also does some great baseball work at Amazon Avenue on the New York Mets. Josh Tesler, welcome to HBL.
And thank you guys for having me on.
Hey, listen, it's our pleasure. Josh, we've been talking about Maple Leafs all episode long, and we're not going to stop because I need to know your opinion. We need to know your opinion on what is going on with this whole controversy related to Travis Dermott. In particular, the fact that this is a player that we've now seen on numerous occasions. The consensus seems to be that he is NHL ready. And now more than ever, with the Morgan Rielly injury, it seems like the Leafs are going to be showing first and foremost whether or not their development system can produce a defenseman for the future. How do you feel about what bodes for Mr. Travis Dermott?
you know, I think one of the problems that the Leafs have had is that, you know, in terms of their prospects, they're just not really giving them enough playing time. You know, and you can, you know, and you can look at the forwards too with Josh Leivo. And so, you know, I mean, he's in and out, you know, and, you know, I mean, when you get to these really, really young prospects, you're not really helping the development that much. And so if the plan for Dermott is for Dermott to go in and out of the lineup, Babcock and Lou are much better off bringing him back down to the minors. And so that way, you know, he can get, you know, a lot more playing time, you know, and I definitely think that would be the best thing for him. I mean, he clearly can't play defense, and he clearly has a definite role in the future for this team. But, you know, the way that Babcock has been shuffling him, Borgman and Carrick in and out, it's just, you know, it's just not really great for his development. Yeah, and it's tough, you know, and it's definitely tough to see that.
With Josh, with it's only, I mean, we're not even really even at the end of January yet, but the trade deadline is just over a month away, and the Leafs pretty much will be making the playoffs. What do you see, or what do you see the Leafs going after for the trade deadline? Where do you think they'll be getting the most help? Do you think they'll be looking on the defensive side of things, or looking for more offense? What do you see for the Leafs coming this trade deadline?
My best guess for the Leafs will be they, you know, I mean, I, you know, I mean, they really lack. I mean, with their fourth line, the GOAT and the Dominic Moore, that there clearly isn't a favorite there. And, you know, I mean, the GOAT has played okay as of late. I think he's got a goal in the last seven games. And I think that he should have probably had one more. I think it was that Matt Martin fight that happened a few nights back that put that other goal in jeopardy. But as Bozak becomes a free agent on July 1st, you know, the Leafs will definitely be having, you know, to go back out and seeing if they can find a replacement for Bozak. And so I wrote a post, I believe it was about a week ago, that the Leafs should be talking to the Sens and seeing if they can try to lure Pageau over. As you know, I know that Pageau hasn't had a really great season this year, but I think in the past two, I think he's been able to total points wise in the last two seasons. So I think he's combined for about 76 points, and you know, and they definitely will need a spark on the third line. So I mean, they could play Pageau now on the fourth, and then next year when they don't want to bring back Bozak, they could plug Pageau in the third line. And then on the defensive side, it's clear that they definitely need someone. I've had a love-hate relationship with Ron Hainsey, but as of late, you know, he's more a defensive mentor now. You know, I mean, it's clear that, you know, I mean, he's great on the PK. When it comes to 5-on-5, he's shaky, but, you know, the one thing that I do like is that he's been there as like a secondary coach to mentor these kids. So when I think against the Sens, I think in the third period, he was doing some coaching with the Dermott, and, you know, that's exactly what they need from him. They need to move away from guys like Roman Polak. The rumors have been that, you know, the Leafs will go trade with Vancouver for Gudbrandsson. I've even seen some Luke Shen rumors. So,
makes Ari very happy.
I'm going to go hang myself right
so,
now.
it's definitely clear that they need someone else, you know, as Polak, you know, I mean, he just tallies penalty minutes. His game is not on par with, you know, the typical two-way defensive guys now, you know, and I know that Babcock loves him, but if it was up to me, come what February, forget when the deadline is, because I know it's not March 1st, February 26th or something like that, you know, definitely move for someone to come in, Pollock's role.